was the year.
Recreating notable events of passing time. Reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world. That was the year.
January 10.
While the nations of Europe pursue the second year of the World War, a train bearing a party of 20 American mining operators speeds across the barren country near Chihuahua, Mexico. At La Vista, the men realize the train is slackening its speed. Thomas D. Holmes and Tom Evans peer from the window to ascertain the cause as the leader of the party, C.R. Watson, enters.
Say, boys, there's a derailed car up ahead of us.
Oh, is that what's holding us up, C.R.?
Yeah. You boys want to walk up and take a look at it?
Sure, we can get a little fresh air. Come on, Tom.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tom. You first.
All right.
Hey, what's that?
Mexicans all around us.
What?
Springing from the bushes, about 20 Mexicans, purported to be headed by the arch-bandit Pancho Villa himself, fell upon the hapless party, massacred all save Holmes, the lone survivor.
March 9.
With the stealth of panthers, a band of 1,500 bandits with Villa at their head again crossed the international boundary into Columbus, New Mexico, raid the town, leave 11 civilians and 8 U.S. soldiers dead.
March 15.
Brigadier General John J. Pershing leading a punitive expedition of about 4,000 and Colonel George A. Dodd with a similar column march into Mexico to find Villa.
April 13.
The de facto government of the Venustiano Carranza requests the removal of U.S. troops from Mexico.
Sporadic raids, conferences between American and Mexican military heads, desultory fighting with subsequent casualties on both sides continue until Carranza, with increasing vehemence, demands that U.S. soldiers be withdrawn from Mexico.
In case of a refusal to retire these troops, there is no further recourse than to defend its territory by an appeal to arms.
Whereupon U.S. Secretary of State Robert Lansing replies,
"The government of the United States would surely be lacking in sincerity and friendship if it did not frankly impress the de facto government that the execution of this threat will lead to the gravest consequences."
June 21, near Carrizal, Mexico.
A hot fight ensues between a portion of Pershing's forces and a party of Carranzistas, in which 23 Americans are captured, increasing the seriousness of an already tense, delicate international situation. Finally, however, the Carrizal prisoners were returned. Conciliatory notes from Carranza were received by the U.S. State Department. And in September, a joint commission of the two countries met in New London, Connecticut, to determine the extent of the control of the Mexican de facto government. Early in the next year, U.S. troops were withdrawn, diplomatic relations were resumed, and the National City Bank surprised the two nations with a publication of figures proving that U.S. commerce with Mexico during the fiscal year of 1916 had been the largest in history.
1916, that was the year.
While the U.S. was experiencing her difficulties with Mexico, Great Britain, already engaged in the greatest conflict in the world's history, was having her own internal troubles with Ireland.
Somewhere on the Irish coast, April 22.
Is that all?
All? Ha ha! Yet on board my cruise, at least 50 cases of ammunition.
I see. Well, Let's get them off.
Stand where you are. Don't move.
Sir Roger
Casement.
Yes?
I arrest you in the name of His Majesty on charges of high treason.
Irish nationalist leader Sir Roger Casement with his companions, surprised in the act of unloading munitions from a German auxiliary cruiser, was placed under arrest, hurried to London. 2 days later, open revolt appeared in Ireland, and immediately martial law was declared. Later, Provisional President Pierce of the self-styled Irish Republic surrendered and was executed in Dublin. May 3, 9 days later, James Connolly, commander-in-chief of the revolution, was executed. On June 26, Sir Roger Casement went on trial for high treason, and only 3 days later heard Lord Chief Justice Viscount Reading deliver sentence.
Roger Casement, you have been found guilty of high treason against the Crown. I therefore sentence you to be removed to Pentonville Prison, where during the first week of August, you will be hanged by the neck until dead. Dead. Dead.
1916. That was the year
that Great Britain's Minister of War, Lord Kitchener, and almost his entire staff met death when the British cruiser Hampshire, carrying them to Russia, ran into a mine off the Orkney Islands and sank.
That was the year.
March 24. On board the unarmed steamship Sussex, crossing from Folkestone to Dieppe, carrying 325 passengers, 25 of whom were Americans, about 2:30 in the afternoon.
I say, what's that up there in the distance?
I don't know. Looks something like a whale.
No, it's not a whale.
Say, do you suppose you don't think it might be
a U-boat? I don't know.
Look, that splash, that streak of water coming toward us.
It is a submarine. That's a torpedo.
Culminating a long series of German and Austrian attacks without warning upon passenger and freight ships, the Sussex case became immediately the basis for another tense situation in the U.S.
April 19, Secretary of State Lansing to Germany.
Unless the imperial government should now immediately declare and effect an abandonment of its present methods of submarine warfare against passenger and freight-carrying vessels, the government of the United States can have no choice but to sever diplomatic relations with the German Empire altogether.
May 5, Foreign Minister von Jagow to the U.S.
German government notifies the government of the United States that German naval forces have received the following order. In accordance with the general principles of search, the destruction of merchant vessels, such vessels shall not be sunk without warning and without saving human lives unless the ship attempt to escape or offer resistance.
But unofficially, German newspapers were unimpressed.
The Berlin Post of April 21.
We have heard enough of silly reproaches leveled at us by America's seagoing citizens. If Washington gentlemen believe we have nothing more important to do than to investigate whether any cattle driver had a lock of his precious hair ruffled while crossing to Europe, then the people in the White House are terribly mistaken.
The Berliner Deutsche Tageszeitung.
Germany will never yield to America because of Wilson's bluff. When the sword of Damocles remains too long suspended, we can see it as only a wooden one.
And as the Democratic National Convention opened in St. Louis in the middle of June, said stentorian senator from Kentucky, Ollie James,
I can see the accusing picture of Christ on the battlefield with the dead and dying all around him, with the screams of shrapnel and the roll of cannon, and I can hear the master say to Woodrow Wilson, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God.
The Republican National Platform supporting Charles Evan Hughes as candidate for the presidency had already declared,
the present administration has destroyed our influence abroad and humiliated us in our own eyes.
And so it was with the campaign slogan,
he kept us out of war.
Ringing in every Democratic speech, Woodrow Wilson was reelected by the slim electoral margin of 277 to 254. Indeed, the president retired on election night thinking he had lost, believing the nation had declared itself for Republican Hughes, and he fully expected to put a daring plan into immediate operation.
Vice President Marshall would resign. Then, Secretary of State Lansing would resign. Wilson would appoint Hughes Secretary of State. Then Wilson himself would resign, and Hughes would succeed to the presidency.
It was not until 3 days after election that it became known that California had carried the election for the incumbents.
1916. That was the year.
John Barrymore swerved from light comedy to drama in the role of William Folder, the condemned forger in John Galsworthy's impelling play, Justice. Emma Dunn was playing the part of Angie in Rachel Crothers' comedy, Old Lady 31, at the 39th Street Theater. Taylor Holmes opened in the title role of His Majesty Bunker Bean. Ruth Chatterton added sparkle to the theater season in Come Out of the Kitchen at the Cohan. The musical stage presented Blue Paradise and its hit song, Auf Wiedersehen. Victor Herbert's The Princess Pat and Rudolph Rimmel's Katinka.
That was the year
that in the realm of the movies you witnessed the impelling spectacles D.W. Griffith's Intolerance and Thomas H. Ince's pictorial sermon against war, Civilization.
And that was the year
that this ever-popular musical favorite first was heard.
There's a story told underneath a Japanese, singing the beauty beneath the cherry blossom tree. Miss Butterfly, her name. Sweet little innocent child was she, till a fine young American from the sea to her garden came.
They met neath the cherry blossoms every day, and he taught her how to love in the American way.
To love with her soul was easy to learn.
Never sigh or cry.